It really depends on the property. Obviously, I'm painting with a broad brush here, but that's kind of how we think about it, is we want to be well capitalized on the front end. And if that leads to great returns, if we end up putting some of that money back, fantastic. And we're very happy to return that. But we'd far rather be able to look folks in the eyes and say, hey, we're asking for a little extra money on purpose. We've underwritten this and it's a deal in this way on purpose because we want to be able to weather the storm. We'd rather don't ever want to go back to the bucket, if you will. We don't go back to the well.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Ben Nelson has produced multiple world record setting and breaking events and productions, and he's used that detailed planning style in his asset management and planning. He's now a multifamily syndicator as part of Wild Oak Capital. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sam. Excited to be here.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. I know I met you just a little over, a month and a half ago at a conference, which was a blast getting to know you at that conference. But for our listeners that don't know you, in 90 seconds or less, can you tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Sure. Actually, I give most of the credit to my younger brother, Eric. He's been playing the real estate game for a long time. My dad had dabbled a little bit in small multifamily and some rentals back in the day, but Eric really kind of lifted it up. He's been bugging me for a long time. I come from, like you mentioned, from large action sports and producing large, difficult projects. He kind of been putting the bug in my ear for years and said, hey, a lot of what you're doing makes a bunch of sense. And then our friend COVID came along. Eric and I had, you know, gone together in a couple of small multifamilies and, you know, kind of got my feet wet into the real estate market, but COVID came along and shut everything down. And quite frankly, the majority of that in my world, you know, I made a living gathering people together. And as soon as we could do any of that, it really made me focus on what that means in the long term, you know, what trading time for money means, especially when you can't trade time for money and there's no other source of income. And really kind of looking at what that means. You know, I'm always building things for other people, other places, and really changing my focus where I could start building something for my family and for myself, but also help, you know, the communities as well, and build something that lasts more than just a couple of moments and fleeting moment in time, if you will. We're really proud of the stuff we produce, but I'm excited to use those skills and translate to multifamily for sure.
Yeah, certainly. And just to give kind of our listeners a scope or scale of some of the things that you were doing, I mean, just for fun, kicks and giggles here on the show, tell us maybe one of the more fun world records, some things you weren't just putting on like, hey, we're going to go out and, you know, do an event over a weekend. You're doing some pretty nutty stuff.
Yeah, we had the opportunity to work with some fun people for sure. So we've broken world records in snowboarding, skiing, motocross for height, distance. We've jumped trucks for a distance. You know, most people are familiar with Red Bull Stratos. We were really fortunate to be able to participate in that program and work some event ops on the ground there and help put a man into near space. I'm happy to say that I have a very small piece of something that lives in the Smithsonian, which is something I'm pretty proud of for the rest of my life as well.
Yeah, man, that's absolutely fantastic. Are you doing anything in the event space now, or is that completely behind you?
No, I think I'll always have my foot in there. It's a passion of mine, and it's something, you know, you build skill set in a certain place and you build relationships in a certain place. So I've transitioned from, you know, producing those things full time and really spending, you know, a project like we worked on a race in Brooklyn this last year, and it really requires a lot of energy and time. And I was gone for, you know, 30, 40, 50 days out of the year away from my family. So I've transitioned into building some stuff. We're producing some smaller real estate conferences, but also some things for fun in town. I planted some seeds during COVID and again, started to reestablish some relationships locally. So we're doing some things. You should come out. There's an event called Chicken Fight in May, where basically it's a fried chicken and whiskey festival. And we shut down an amusement park and we invite all our friends to come have a good time and taste the best chicken in town. There's about 40 or 50 restaurants that all compete for a couple of different titles. So it's more about transitioning the time that how I choose to use my time and really taking control and ownership of where and how I use my time. So I'll do some smaller events for fun and we'll gather some folks, but I'll spend most of my time focusing on building a legacy for my family and for those folks in the community we work with.
What has it been? What have been some of the skill sets? Because a lot of this industry for real estate is built on two things. I say it all the time on the show, deals and money. Like, you need both of those, but marketing is a component of both of those in a very heavy way. And the industry you come from is a heavy marketing industry. What are some of the skill sets that you've used that have kind of crossed over?
Well, I think you need to be scrappy, and it's just like a lot of the industries as well. So it is deals, it's deal flow, but a lot of this is relationship, right? So a lot of the ability to have conversations with people, the ability to ask questions, perhaps that normally people don't ask. You know, everybody knows how to call a broker. Everybody knows how to follow up with a broker, but building relationships in such a way, and I know I'm not the only one that says this, what value are you adding to folks on a broker side? You know, we also do try to source quite a bit off market. We've got our own sources and some things that we're doing there that we build in. But I think the biggest thing that I've found and the thing that translates the most from events to how we operate is game planning. And what, you know, it can be called production schedule. It can be called run a show. It can be called, you know, battle plan if you come from the military. What we found is running with a script that you pre-plan. So I built in this habit of writing down exactly what the next day is going to be like, not just for my time, blocking out the time, but all the tasks and what we want to do. So when you get to the day of, every single day, it's, you don't have to think very much. You're just going with the plan you set out. And I've found that it saves me a tremendous volume of time and efficiency to do that. So whether, you know, and if we have to shuffle things around and adjust, but that's been huge for me. So marketing is one thing, but I think to me, it's a really low hanging fruit idea, but very few people actually take the time to truly plan out. And the day for me, it's the day before. I wake up in the morning, like I don't have to think about anything. I just execute my day. It has truly saved so much time.
When do you do that game planning? Do you do that the night before, the morning before? Like, are you thinking 48 hours in advance? What's that look like?
No, I usually do about 24 hours. I mean, it's about the night before. So as a part of the rhythm of my day, kind of closing down, there's a couple of different journaling tactics that I've kind of put into my life. I use the Daily Stoic. So Ryan Holiday has a thing, if you're familiar with any type of that stoicism, but it's just really is kind of more thought starters and thought enders. So the end of the day, it's kind of following his lead. There's an end of the day journaling, and then I'll just sit down and for 15 minutes, go through my calendar and what's on the horizon for the next day and figure out, you know, what's the plan? Where do I have time? What am I going to fit in? What are my top three priorities? What other things do I need to do? And then I have, like I said, I've got a game plan for the day. And I write in pencil. I've become a pencil guy for sure. And it's the ability to adjust, but knowing that you can continuously walk through your day without having to remember or think about what's going on makes you super effective.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that cuts down on the mental fatigue. And that is where I think, you know, so much of the time we lose countless hours in a day just from transitioning from one task to the next to the next. Do you time block particular 100%. Items together? Do you time block? What's that process?
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm like a lot of people in this space, right? Like I've got multiple projects and multiple realms going on. You mentioned events, you know, and there's other projects I'm working on that we're trying to kind of cross over. So I do try to block those out, but it allows me to not have to shift back and forth. Like I'm going to work on this thing for 3 hours. And most of the people that work with me understand that, hey, I'll get back to you at 11 a.m. and I'm from 11 to 3, I'm all yours. Right. But in the morning, I'm working on something else. And as long as you set those understanding barriers up with the folks you're working with too, it can be difficult. You know, like everybody wants everything from me all the time. Like we're in a give it to me as soon as you possibly can kind of space. And as with the internet, everybody wants everything now, but it's up to you. I mean, that's something that I've learned. I mean, people will react to you how you allow them to, and people will come to you and act as you act. And I think the most important thing there is it allows me to be respectful of other people's time. It cuts down on you running late from meeting to meeting. It cuts down from you having to constantly shuffle and like, oh, hey, can we reschedule this? Right. If you're thinking about it, you know, the night before and you know exactly what your day is, then you can send a note the night before. If all of a sudden you come across something, then you can be respectful of people's time and you're not reacting constantly. You can be proactive about what that is. You know, there's a story that I tell sometimes is, a guy that I met, he actually works. He was my wife's boss and we were sitting with him for some reason. And he excused himself. He said, I'm very sorry. I have to leave this meeting. There's somebody who's very important that I need to speak to. And made it sense in such a way that we thought it was like a president of a company or something like that. He excused. I came to find out later that day, it was a new hire. It's like one of the most junior people he was putting on his team. But the way that he thought about that and the way he prioritized that in his day, and he excused himself from a meeting saying, I'm very sorry, but I have a very important phone call that I have to take with a very important person, sets the tone. And is and like, he didn't tell us that. We found that out from somebody else. But the respect volume that I got from that one interaction and the way that I try to put that into my day is enormous.
It's interesting that commanding your own calendar the way you want it and saying, hey, look, I'm time blocking. I'm taking care of the things that I have to take care of now in its own right really helps you value other people more. That's a 100%. A really Yeah, it's a really unique twist on that. And I like that because then when you're on, you're on. And when you're off, you're off. And yep. It's like, hey, I'm not here. I'm doing the things I've set out for me to do. And you probably are way more efficient that way as well.
Well, you also set an understanding and a respect level for the people to show up prepared, right? Like, we don't take meetings unless there's an agenda. Like, it's just the way that it goes. Like, we will respect your time if you respect ours. I promise that I'm going to show up. I'm going to show up on time and I'm going to show up prepared. And I expect the same of you. So it's just, again, it's a way that you treat people. It's the way that you put that out there. You know, you go back to events. The reason that this is really important on a large scale event is I go back to the racing example. You know, we're building this race in Brooklyn. We may have 50 different vendors on site all trying to accomplish things at once. And if you haven't in advance orchestrated who goes where with what materials and what machines and which people, and you're not taking care of making sure that people are doing it safely, and all of a sudden something breaks down in this machine, you have to have the ability to pivot. If you don't have a plan and understand what happens down the line from that, you can get in some serious trouble, because most of these, you know, we're working 18, 20 hours a day. If you lose 5 hours, then you can legitimately lose a day by the time you're done.
Right.
So, you know, and you've got lots of money on the line. It's just like real estate, right? You have other people's money that you're trying to take care of and do a good job. So by planning efficiently, by thinking through the what ifs, by thinking, actually writing it down and sharing that with somebody else, you're not only holding yourself liable, but you're also putting it out there like, hey, this as together, this is what we're going to go about. So it works in asset management. It works in birthday parties. It works like all the way down the line, man. It just depends on what you're looking for and how deep you want to get into and plan it. But it's been super important for me. It's been really helpful for me and how I operate business.
What role have you taken inside of the multifamily real estate business?
Mostly asset management. I mean, we're a small group. It's a team of four. And I will say, you know, team building has been the most influential part of my development as a leader, also the ability to give and to take. So we're fortunate in the sense that all of us have found four people. And again, the credit goes to my brother. He's really done the most work putting these folks together, but we have overlapping skill sets. We have the ability. So any one of us can underwrite, any one of us can do asset management, but we kind of have our lanes in that sense. So Eric and I focus primarily on, you know, asset management and fundraising. Eric's kind of out front. He's got the podcast. We'd love to have you on the podcast. And really kind of that public facing side of it. John does a lot of the sourcing and deal sourcing, and Shane is smarter than any human I've ever met at math. The guy can underwrite in his brain, and it's insane to me. I'm more words than the maths on my side.
That's absolutely intriguing. Tell me about the formation of your team, and then I want to hear what assets you guys are buying right now.
Sure. Eric really was sort of the central wheel here. He knew some folks, like, you know, we're all participating in some masterminds. Eric's involved in some. Eric and I both utilize the same business coach also, which I would plug that also if anybody's thinking about it. You know, there's tons of programs and everything else, I think to each his own, but I focus on a kind of a bi-weekly business coach. Through that, Eric and I met John, introduced that, and Eric and met Shane actually just through a meetup in Durango. Eric lives in Durango, Colorado, and Shane has a couple of properties there. And it was by chance, they struck up a conversation and started talking. And we kind of made this Voltron, and those three together had met each other. And then I kind of came into the mix, especially at the end there, because it was right when we were finishing that big race. And like I said, I disappeared for about 30 days. They asked me to just sit and have a conversation with them. And it just seemed to work. Like, we have overlapping skill sets. We have overlapping personalities. So what's really, really nice though, is it allows people to have a life. It allows people to work on other projects. It allows people to pay attention to multiple things. And we consistently can keep pushing, right? Like, you know, we went through a really dry spell. And to lead into your second question, it's really tough out there right now. There's a lot of money in the game, and there's a lot of people throwing good money after bad and underwriting deals in such a way that I honestly don't understand. And I think it could be a little bit dangerous, especially if, you know, it's assuming that everything is going to keep on rolling the way it's going to roll. Right. And if there's a shift, I think there's some people going to be in the water. Right. So we're playing really firmly in the multifamily space, in kind of a B2C category. A lot of value add is what we're looking to produce. We've been heavily into Texas and Oklahoma. We've just been reaching out to some deals here in Colorado, looked at some in Louisiana, but Texas and Oklahoma has been kind of our bread and butter. And there's a lot down there that we understand. We've developed some great relationships. We're not opposed to moving to other places. Again, Colorado, mostly because I'm here and I have the ability to develop relationships in person. Shane and John both live in Texas and they've been able to do the same. But I think we have to be really smart about how the shift in the market is coming and what that actually means. And again, we're really conservative. And I know everybody says they're conservative, but I've seen some people's numbers and I think that we're actually conservative. But we really want to make sure that we're building this for the long term. And we're really focused on community. we sat down together as a team in Mexico. We just took a couple of days and disappeared and said, hey, we just need to spend some time together. And the one thing that I remember coming out of that meeting and the formation of what we're going to do this year is that we've decided people first. And we say it all the time internally. So it may be a great deal. We may be able to make some money on it. But if it doesn't help the community, if it doesn't raise that community up, if we're not providing a quality product, then we don't. We've said no to a bunch of things that probably could have made us money already this year that just didn't make sense for us to help in that community at all.
That's really, really intriguing. Absolutely fantastic. I love that. And I guess what are some strategic steps you guys are taking right now to prepare for a potential recession or change in the market winds? What does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on who you talk to, right? Like half of the multifamily group thinks it's going to be a rocket ship and never's going to land. And the other half is doom and gloom and everything's going to go wrong. I tend to swing somewhere in the middle there. So a lot of it is really just being smart about capitalization. Our ability to fix things. And again, it goes back to that planning for the what ifs, right? When I look at some people's underwriting, there's sometimes very few what ifs. It goes back to production planning, to battle planning, our ability to pivot. We say, hey, we want to turn all of these units out to be X. And also we're going to add a dog park. And also we're going to add a playground, for example. But we also know that we have a margin in there that if we have to say, hey, we're going to hold on that dog park, everybody's going to get units turned. Or we know that if we project rents and if we get to a downturn, we have the ability to cover our ratios. We have the ability to still do some things. We ride into our, like, yeah, we'll do gifts at Christmas. We want to do some community engagement things. So we add in a couple of these additional pieces and we're really open about it with our investors. Like, hey, this is what we want to do. You can take a look and we'll go through the PPM, like where all the money goes. And it really depends on the property. Obviously, I'm painting with a broad brush here, but that's kind of how we think about it is we want to be well capitalized on the front end. And if that leads to great returns, if we end up putting some of that money back, fantastic. And we're very happy to return that. But we'd far rather be able to look folks in the eyes and say, hey, we're asking for a little extra money on purpose. We've underwritten this and it's a deal in this way on purpose because we want to be able to weather the storm. We'd rather don't ever want to go back to the bucket, if you will. We don't go back to the well.
Right. What is a percentage? Do you have a certain percentage over that you are typically raising for a deal?
That's a tough thing because it really depends per deal on what that deal needs. We're mostly in the value add space. And I think it depends because it's a really volatile time right now too, right? Like the volume of dollars that it takes to build a tin shed 2 years ago versus the volume of dollars it takes to build today are dramatically different. So we take a look at the prevailing winds. We take a look at what we're looking at for, you know, for example, we're looking at a group of units up in the mountains, and for us to get labor up there, for us to do some of the turns up there is exponentially more expensive than it would be in, say, Lubbock, Texas. Right. So it's hard to put a percentage. I know that's kind of dodging the question, but it really depends on the market and it really depends on the project. You know, we look really heavily at debt to income, or excuse me, our debt coverage ratio. And we want to make sure that we're in the green pretty strongly there, both from anticipated rents, but what we think we can do in the short term as well.
Right. I love that. Ben, thanks for coming on today. This has been a blast. Last three questions here for you. What is one mistake you can help our listeners avoid and how would you avoid it?
Ask questions. Never be afraid to say, I don't know the answer to that, but I'll find out. The ability to be honest with people and the ability to go and find the answer and ask questions, building those relationships is the number one lesson that I've learned across all of the industries I've ever worked in.
Right. I love that. Next question for you. What is one way you're making the world a better place?
Just talking to you, man. Every day I get to see you. It makes my heart glow. No, we try to do whatever we can to lift people up. And again, that's a variety of things, but we really want to build communities that can help themselves and support themselves. But building better places for people to live and raise their families is important to us.
Right. Absolutely. I love that. Last question. If our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Look us up, wildoakcapital.com. Take a look. We've got a couple of deals coming through. Please sign up. We'll send you out information every time we get a new deal.
Awesome, man. Thank you, Ben, for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.